This copyrighted audio file from the writings of David S. Lample is offered free of charge to the glory of God the Father and the praise of Jesus Christ our Lord. Detailed copyright and resource information is included at the end of this file.
First Things, an examination of Genesis 1 to 11. Session 12, the final day of creation. Part 1. Genesis 1, verses 24 to 31. This session first published December 10, 2023. As day 6 dawns, we see an almost completed earth in the completed expanses of the heavens. In day 1, the primal heavens and primal earth are created. Empty, shapeless, void. The earth is utterly dark and covered in surging waters. After this, God creates primal, elemental light. Remember, for the final, eternal state of man, there will be no need for light, for that will be supplied by the Godhead. Revelation 21:23. There's no reason not to assume that that was also true in eternity past, prior to creation. Day 2, God does something that will be of vital importance to all the future beings on earth. He creates the first heaven, which will be an expanse between the waters on earth's surface and waters above, that is, the clouds. Thus, earth will have a surrounding atmosphere, necessary not just for future birds in which to fly, but necessary for a suitable climate for beast and man. On day 3 next, God separates the waters on earth's surface so that the dry land can emerge. Immediately, within the same day, the fertile dry land sprouts fully mature vegetation, plants and fruit trees bearing mature fruit with seeds. During the following day, day 4, God populates the second heaven with planets and stars, including the nearest star, our sun, to give light on the earth and rule the day, and earth's moon to rule the night. These two lights he ordains to separate the light from the darkness. All these lights that dwell in the second heaven, space, receive the light that will shine down on and be used by man from that elemental light created on day 1. Day 5. Now begins the systematic populating of this brand new earth. There is reason and logic behind this. One might even say, an intelligent design. Let me add a sidebar here. I was amused by looking up intelligent design in Wikipedia. Not one of my typical references. Quote, intelligent design is a pseudo-scientific argument for the existence of God, presented by its proponents as an evidence-based scientific theory about life's origins. Proponents claim that certain features of the universe and of living things are best explained by an intelligent cause, not an undirected process such as natural selection. Intelligent design is a form of creationism that lacks empirical support and offers no testable or tenable hypotheses, and is therefore not science. End quote. Okay, that's the other camp. Back to our narrative. God, the most intelligent designer there has ever been, will populate the earth in order from the least to the greatest, or perhaps more accurately, from the lowest to the highest beings. He will begin with those that swim in the sea, followed by those that fly in the expanse immediately above the surface of the earth, that is, the sky. These will include far more than just fish and birds, but some aquatic reptiles, and great sea monsters and flying dinosaurs such as pterodactyls. Their creator not only declares this good, but surprisingly blesses these two kinds, ordaining them with the power to be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters in the seas and let the birds multiply on the earth. So we now come to the sixth and final day of creation, the first part of which we will look at in this session, but let's begin by reading the full account of this last day. Let's begin reading it, verse 24. Then God said, "Let the earth bring forth living creatures after their kind, cattle and creeping things, and beasts of the earth after their kind." And it was so. God made the beasts of the earth after their kind, and the cattle after their kind, and every creeping thing of the ground after its kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness, so that they will have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky and over the cattle and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." And God created man in his own image. In the image of God he created him. Male and female he created them. God blessed them. And God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. And have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky and over every living thing that creeps on the earth." Then God said, "Behold, I have given to you every plant yielding seed that is on the surface of all the earth, and every tree which has its fruit of the has the fruit of the tree yielding seed. It shall be food for you. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the sky, and to every thing that creeps on the earth which has life, I have given every green plant for food." And it was so. And God saw all that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Let's look at verse 24. Then God said, "Let the earth bring forth living creatures after their kind, cattle and creeping things, and beasts of the earth after their kind." And it was so. What I quoted Leupold on in our previous session applies to the creative act of verse 24 as well. Here's what he wrote. God could have called forth these creatures by his mere word. Instead, he speaks the word that enables the earth to bring them forth. That's Leupold. But note, a comparison of verses 20 to 25, the creation of living creatures, with verses 11 to 12, vegetation and trees, reveals a subtle difference. Note that verse 11 says, "Then God said, let the earth sprout vegetation," and is reinforced in verse 12 with, "And the earth brought forth vegetation." Verses 20 and 24 say something similar. "Then God said, let the waters swarm," and "Then God said, let the earth bring forth," respectively. But instead of simply reinforcing this as in verse 12, the text reminds us that even though the waters and earth played a role in this creative effort, it was God who made the creatures. Verse 21, "And God created." And verse 25, "God made the beasts of the earth." In this systematic creation, God draws a distinction between living creatures and plants and trees. And later in day 6, he will draw an even sharper distinction between the beasts and man. Here is evidence, even in the first week, that God is sovereign and holds the right to establish a hierarchy within his creation. He calls the shots. 1 Chronicles 29, verse 11. Exodus 33, verse 19. Romans 9, verses 14 to 18. Now, once again, we have living creatures, that is, soul of life. As I pointed out in our last session, even though these land animals, as well as the aquatic and flying beasts, have souls, this does not mean the same as it does with man. The soul in this regard means merely an animating principle, that which causes them to breathe. The difference in the nature of the soul and in the hierarchy of beings between animals and man can be seen when verse 24 is compared to verse 7 in chapter 2. Look at that, Genesis 2, verse 7. Then Yahweh God formed man of dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And so the man became a living being. We see two differences, one subtle, one more pronounced, between the chapter 1 and chapter 2 accounts. First, as to the soul, we see that the process is inferior to that for man. In verse 24, as in verses 20 and 21, we see God commanding that creatures come forth with souls. That is, they are created that way from the outset, prefab, as it were. But with man, the soul is introduced by God in a more personal, even intimate manner. Then Yahweh God formed man of dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And so the man became, he was not created a living being, he became a living being because God breathed that life into him. He became a living being. Here the personal name for God is used, Yahweh Elohim. And only after the man is formed from the ground is he given his soul. How? By having it breathed into him personally by Yahweh. Second, the picture in verse 24 is of God commanding something to emerge from the earth. But in verse 7 of chapter 2, even though the earth or soil is involved in both, it is a picture here of how I've always described it, God getting his hands dirty in the creation of man. There is a measure of detachment in God's creation of the aquatic and flying animals and the mammals created just before man. But with the creation of man, it is different. God is the one literally forming man out of what Luther calls a lump of earth. Yet, just how detached God is in his creation of the land animals is, if at all, is hard to say. Look at verse 19 in chapter 2. Genesis 2, verse 19. And out of the ground Yahweh God had formed every beast of the field and every bird of the sky, and he brought each to the man to see what he would call it. And whatever the man called a living creature, that was its name. So note that, out of the ground Yahweh God had formed every beast of the field and every bird of the sky. That word translated formed is the same as that used in verse 7 to describe Yahweh God forming man from the earth. Yetzar. More on all this, of course, when we get to chapter 2, but I just wanted to bring that out right now. The verse continues back in chapter 1, living creatures after their kind, cattle and creeping things, and beasts of the earth after their kind. Here we have three groups, or classifications of land animals. Three kinds, or species, that God brings forth from the earth. Cattle, creeping things, and beasts of the earth. First, cattle. The translation cattle is common and okay, but I think it's too limiting. It's too restrictive. I think the ESV and NIVs are better with livestock. For behama is a broader term than just bovines. The idea is domestic beasts, those dumb, that is, non-speaking, animals bred and managed by humans. Then there's creeping things. I seldom have opportunity to recommend the NIV, so let me do it here, as I did with cattle. The standard translation for this among our versions is creeping things. But the NIVs have creatures that move along the ground. And that's closer to the meaning of the Hebrew remes. This would then include everything, large or small, moving upon the earth or close to the earth, moving about on short legs. Then there are beasts of the earth. Once more, the NIVs, while no doubt the least literal in their translation, leave us with a clearer idea of hareth, haretz, in the Hebrew, with wild animals. That is, non-domesticated wild beasts with freedom of movement upon the earth. That's what's behind beasts of the earth. Now, verse 25. God made the beasts of the earth after their kind, and the cattle after their kind, and every creeping thing of the ground after its kind. And God saw that it was good. As he has before, Moses reiterates the facts of 24 in verse 25. But I can't help but think that in this instance, considering the pedantic, repetitive nature of verse 25, he's using it to draw a contrast with what follows. And what a dramatic contrast it is. Look at the rhythm of verse 25. God made the beasts of the earth after their kind, and the cattle after their kind, and every creeping thing of the ground after its kind. And God saw that it was good. So get that repetitive, pedantic nature. After their kind, after their kind, after its kind. The creation and allocation of all these creatures was precisely according to God's plan, as with all those before. They were allocated into different species, sharing some traits, but each still distinct from the others. It pleased God to create them this way. It was good. But now, he's going to create something entirely different. Something that will share its kind with nothing less than God himself. In verse 26, we eavesdrop on the planning for this new creation. This isn't the doing, but the discussion and establishing of the purpose behind the doing in verse 27. This is the Godhead, as it were, sitting around the conference table, working out the details for the next and most profound step of the creation. Verse 26. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness, so that they will have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky and over the cattle and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." Every Sunday morning in our class, during our prayer time, we are reminded of the consequences of man's fall in the garden, the consequences of his short-sighted rebellion against his Maker, the twisted, depraved, painful, disease-ridden, groaning world in which we live is the direct result of the first man and woman forgetting, even just for one fatal moment, that they and they alone in all of this fresh creation had been made in the image of God. I would contend that there are three, and perhaps only three, epical events in the vast history of time that sent or will send a cosmic quake throughout the universe. Surely one of these was when the Son of God, Son of Man, died upon the cross. That quake is described in Matthew's Gospel. And Jesus cried out again with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit. And behold, the veil of the sanctuary was torn in two from top to bottom, and the earth shook, and the rocks were split, and the tombs were opened, and many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep were raised. And coming out of the tombs after his resurrection, they entered the holy city and appeared to many. Matthew 27, verses 50 to 53. Mortal man cannot fathom the fierce trembler that coursed through the universe in that moment. Like unto his death on the cross will be Christ's return. The universe will quake. But most especially this earth will be literally torn apart and reshaped, as is described in profound detail in Zechariah 14, when Christ once again stands upon the earth. Zechariah 14, verses 4 to 10. The first event, however, to cause such a shudder and tremor throughout earth and the heavens occurred not long, that is, in cosmic terms, not long after the first week of creation. And we have to understand the depth and impact of that betrayal before we can truly comprehend the supreme grace that a holy God dispensed upon the human race on this sixth day. Then, of course, it works from the opposite direction as well. Understanding the unimaginable grace of being made in God's image reveals the true nature of the insidious action of Adam. We have clearly seen, as we have progressed through the days of creation, that creation was no higgledy-piggledy mishmash of random acts, but a well-ordered, systematic plan that began with the elemental basics, then moved steadily and logically into the more detailed aspects of the universe and this world. This plan, as made clear in the Genesis narrative, was earth-centric. Everything was being created for the benefit of this globe we call home. And now we see, and will see, that it was all being done for the benefit of man. God didn't do all this for chipmunks or garter snakes or polar bears. He didn't do it for the trees, as disappointing as that surely was to J.R.R. Tolkien. And he didn't do it for the fish in the sea. No, he did all this for human beings. And it is a measure of God's forgiveness and grace that even after Adam's betrayal, God would send his own Son as the price of man's eternal salvation. Indeed, knowing that Adam would betray him did not stifle God's grace, nor the blessing of giving man dominion over the earth and its other creatures. Chapter 3 will reveal in no uncertain terms that man's betrayal of his Maker was a cataclysmic offense that will reverberate not just through the heavens, but through time on earth, all the way through to the great white throne judgment of Christ in Revelation 20, verses 11 to 15. Only then will the penalty of sin be removed in preparation for the new heaven and new earth, and the believer's eternal state with God. In our next session, 3 weeks hence, we will examine in full God's last act of creation, man made in God's image, verses 26 to 31.
Thank you for using our Bible study resources. This has been the audio version of our weekly printed session notes. It is copyright 2023 by David S. Lample, but is offered free of charge and may be freely shared with others. All printed and audio notes are available in the Bible Studies section of our website at dlample.com. This website also includes our monthly devotional, Reflections by the Pond, as well as archives of our devotional publications from the last 33 years. All of our His Company Christian drama resources are now available at dlample.com as well. Unless otherwise indicated, scripture in this audio file is from the Legacy Standard Bible, copyright the Lachman Foundation. Greek and Hebrew citations and definitions are from Strong's Greek and Hebrew Dictionary and the NASB Greek-Hebrew Dictionary. All resources are offered free of charge in acknowledgement of the Lordship of Jesus Christ. For more information about who we are, please visit the About Us page at our website.